Welcome to the Quest Software Podcast on MySQL Store Procedures, featuring Guy Harrison, Quest's Chief Architect for Database Solutions. My name is Nicole Tams, and I'm Quest Product Marketing Manager for MySQL Solutions. Guy Harrison is the author of the new O'Reilly book, MySQL Store Procedures Programming, which was co-authored by Stephen Feuerstein. In this podcast, Guy will introduce you to MySQL Store Procedures, which were introduced in the MySQL 5.0 release at the end of 2005. Now, I'll turn it over to Guy Harrison.
Hi, and welcome to Quest Software's podcast series. Today, I'm going to briefly introduce MySQL Store Procedures to you, talk about the history of store procedures, why we might want to use store procedures in our applications, circumstances in which store procedures would not be appropriately used, and what we think are the best practices for store procedure implementation. So let's get started with the definition of store procedure. When we use the term stored procedures, we are typically talking about some stored program code, and it's stored in the database server itself, and it executes within the database server. So when you save a stored procedure, you'll typically save the source code and perhaps the compiled version of the stored procedure inside the database, typically inside database tables. And when you invoke the stored procedure, it will run in the context of the database server or run on the host on which the database server is on. It may actually run within the same process as the database server itself. In the case of MySQL, it would in fact run inside one of the threads that constituted the MySQL server process. When we talk about stored procedures, we often use the term loosely to refer to stored procedures, stored functions, and stored triggers. A stored procedure is a generic piece of program code that can be run from within the database server. A stored function is effectively very similar to a stored procedure, except that it can return a single value, as functions do, and can often be used as a user-defined function within standard SQL. A trigger is a stored program that is invoked in response to some sort of an event, typically when you do a DML operation, an insert, update, or delete against a table. The trigger code might be invoked to validate that the DML did not violate business rules and perhaps to do some audit logging or something like that. MySQL stored procedures appeared in the MySQL 5 release that came out about the end of last year. MySQL 5 supports procedures, functions, and triggers. And the MySQL stored procedure language is based on the ANSI standard SQL PCM specification. This is the same standard that's used by IBM DB2. Unfortunately, it bears not very much similarity to the stored procedure languages employed by Oracle and SQL Server, which are pretty much completely proprietary.
In the next section, Guy delves into some advantages that stored procedures can bring to an application, specifically security.
Stored procedures came to prominence in the early 90s during what we might call the client-server stage of computing architectures. And in the client-server architecture, of course, we would typically have one large database server supporting a number of client programs, typically written in something like Visual Basic, running on client PCs. And in the client-server architecture, stored procedures had a lot of very, very clear advantages. They could enhance security, reduce network traffic, help distribute the load of the application between the client and the server, and help to centralize some of the logic, the business logic of the application in one place. Many of these advantages still hold true today, and we'll be discussing them one by one very shortly. But I guess it's important to realize that the world has changed since stored procedures as a concept were first introduced, and the idea that stored procedures are always a best practice or always should always be a central part of an application architecture, I believe, is no longer true. It's in today's architectures, it's much more important to make a judicious choice whether to use stored procedures or not. So let's look at some of the advantages that stored procedures can bring to an application. And one of the key advantages of a stored procedure implementation is security. And these there's two types of advantages in the security realm that you might get from stored procedures. Firstly, when we create a stored procedure, we are able to give the stored procedure greater privileges on tables than the user who executes the stored procedures. So it's quite easy for us to create a stored procedure that inserts into, say, the sales table, and to allow a user to execute that stored procedure without giving that user privileges to insert into the sales table directly. And this gives us a lot of control under the circumstances by which that user can do those sorts of inserts. Now, in the client-server stage, users would typically log into the database using the database authentication, which meant that if they could get in through a command line client, they could potentially issue their own SQLs and corrupt or maliciously change the database data. And stored procedures were a very effective way of countering that threat. In today's architectures, with a middle tier that typically does the authentication and end users not knowing the database username and password, this advantage is lessened but not eliminated, because if in a stored procedure implementation, it's still true that if the middle tier authentication is somehow cracked, then the malicious user will only be able to issue stored procedure statements that will still have auditing and various other restrictions on them. And of course, it's worth remembering that there are still client-server applications out there in the world, and it's not always the case. There'll be an effective middle tier. Now, another advantage of stored procedures in modern applications is resistance to SQL injection. And SQL injection occurs when a program accepts some data from the user and then inserts that data into a SQL string. It might be a search for a particular product. For instance, the user types in the product name. The application encloses that product name into the SQL and issues the SQL to the database. Now, if the user's clever and if the program is not very sophisticated, it's possible for the user to insert SQL statements into that string and cause the SQL that is sent to be quite different from what was anticipated. They might end up doing a union and selecting data out of the passwords table, for instance. Now, there are a number of ways of protecting from SQL injection, and all good developers should be aware of SQL injection and the methods to avoid it. However, by using stored procedures, it's possible to create a database which is fairly resistant to SQL injection, because you can't inject SQL into a stored procedure call per se. The only exception to that is if the stored procedure itself includes some dynamic SQL. It's possible but unlikely that you might actually be able to insert some SQL into the call into the stored procedure, and that SQL could then be injected into. But in general, an application that uses stored procedures will be fairly resistant to SQL injection when compared to one that uses native SQL.
To further secure your MySQL database, Quest provides a new security manager in the newest release of Toad for MySQL version 2.0. This allows the administrator to permit or restrict user access to specific features of Toad, which provides better control over the system. In the next section of this podcast, Guy describes some of the advantages of using stored procedures in MySQL deployments.
Stored procedures can also improve performance of certain applications, primarily by reducing network traffic. In many applications, we have a situation in which a complex interaction occurs between the database to implement some sort of transaction. So if you go up to the ATM machine and ask to withdraw funds, there may be an interaction with the database in which your username is sent to the database, back comes your account number. The application then sends a request to look at your current balance, and that comes back. Then another SQL is sent to withdraw the funds, and then an update is sent to lower your balance, and then a commit is sent. And there might be six or, you know, maybe a dozen network round trips involved in that interaction. Now, by using a single stored procedure call, it's possible to eliminate all but two of those network round trips. Now, if that is done for an application which is itself network bound, then we might get significant performance improvements. There's a number of other, perhaps more minor advantages to stored procedures in applications. It provides for a data abstraction layer in a fairly nice way. Most modern architectures do in some way try and eliminate the details of the underlying data model from the business logic. And in certain applications, it might be convenient to do that via stored procedures and effectively create an API for manipulating the back-end data. And this has another advantage, that if you change the back-end data model, it may well be possible that you don't have to change your application, you only have to change your stored procedures. And then there's the portability argument for stored procedures. In theory, when we call a stored procedure, the call statement looks pretty identical no matter what the backend database might be. And we can place inside our stored procedures, we could place some vendor-specific optimizations. And then by eliminating those vendor-specific optimizations from our application code, we could move our application from one database to another simply by rewriting those specific stored procedures. As I'll get to later, though, the portability argument for stored procedures is not that great due to the differences between stored procedure implementations that exist in the real world. Another advantage of stored procedures is that we can define user-defined functions for SQL, and this can often simplify our SQL, make our SQL more readable, and sometimes improve performance, although there are plenty of cases where you need to be very, very careful about user-defined functions if you want to maintain good performance. And finally, stored triggers are an incredibly powerful way to implement some data integrity rules right there in the database that cannot be circumvented by the application under any circumstances. You can implement more complex referential integrity rules, such as ARCs and so forth. You can also implement rules, check constraint type rules, such that a value must not be less than zero and so forth. Now, some of these things are a little bit tricky to do in the current implementation of MySQL. There are ways of doing them, but they're not particularly straightforward. In subsequent releases, MySQL, I believe, will get easier. Against these advantages, let's look at some of the drawbacks of stored procedures. First off, and perhaps most noticeably in many cases, stored procedures can be significantly slower in certain circumstances. In particular, none of the stored procedure implementations in any database are very good at number crunching. If you have a procedure that does little or no database interaction but does a lot of calculations, you'll probably find that that stored procedure will execute many times slower than an equivalent logic written in, say, PHP or Java. Now, this is true, as I said, for all database server types, Oracle, SQL Server, etc. But it's particularly true for MySQL at the moment because with the first release of any new language, we usually find that its optimization is not as great as it becomes over time. And so I would anticipate that every release of the MySQL stored procedure language will get faster as the compiler and interpreter becomes more sophisticated and more mature. I did say earlier, though, don't forget that a stored procedure can execute faster than a traditional program if network round trips between the database are the deciding factor. So if you want to reduce your network overhead, use a stored procedure. If you want to reduce your CPU overhead, you're probably better to use something else. By using stored procedures, we can inadvertently fracture the logic in our application. This can have some maintenance drawbacks. So if we have a complex piece of logic and we implement some in the middle tier code, say it's in PHP or something, and then we've got another part of the logic that's implemented within a stored procedure, that might be fine, providing everything works as we expect. But what happens when we want to try and debug that particular activity? We will find that the debugger can't follow through from the PHP code into the stored procedure code. We'll also possibly have to use different developers because our PHP programmer might be unfamiliar with the MySQL stored procedure language. So there's some advantages, in short, to keeping all your logic in the one place, and this is true in whatever languages you might be using, and it's certainly true when looking at stored procedures. If you're going to divide up your processing between the middle tier and the back end, a good demarcation line usually hits at the point where you're creating data access objects or you're creating a data access layer. It can be quite successful if that's the point. But if you divide sort of in a very arbitrary way and sometimes your logic's in a stored procedure and sometimes your logic's in PHP or Java, then that's probably going to create maintenance nightmares for you. Now, we talked earlier about how stored procedures could improve portability. Unfortunately, this is only sometimes true. So it is true that a stored procedure call tends to look the same regardless of the backend database. So in Java, for instance, you'll create a callable statement object and it will look pretty much the same regardless of whether it's Oracle or MySQL at that point. Unfortunately, the way in which stored procedures work, especially the way in which they return result sets, differs very, very markedly between the various databases. Initially, Oracle stored procedures couldn't return result sets at all. And even when Oracle introduced the ability to return result sets through what they call ref cursors, The way in which it occurs from a programming point of view is totally different from the way in which it occurs in MySQL and SQL Server and DB2. So consequently, if you have stored procedures that return result sets, your code is going to have to change if those stored procedures are in Oracle or when they're in MySQL. You will be able to switch between SQL Server and MySQL fairly easily, which is good news, but you won't really be able to switch between Oracle. So that portability advantage is somewhat diminished by that fact. Now, another disadvantage that will be temporary, but nevertheless is something you should bear in mind, is that the MySQL stored procedure implementation is currently virtually at a 1.0 level. This is the very first release. The stored procedure language is therefore relatively immature. Now, I'm certainly not saying that MySQL haven't done an excellent job with the stored procedure language, not at all. But it's just a truism of this industry that you tend to avoid using 1.0 features when you can. And so therefore you might want to wait a little while until the stored procedure language matured. Now, in particular, there are a couple of ANSI standard features missing in the MySQL implementation, and they are the ability to signal your own exception and the ability in a generic signal handler to work out what error caused the handler to fire. So, for instance, it's pretty common in most of in many languages for you to create an exception handler that fires for whatever error occurs, and then to report the specific error code or to do an if statement to work out what to do based on what the error code is. Unfortunately, in the current implementation, you're not able to view the error code that caused the exception handler to fire. So you generally have to create exception handlers for every specific circumstance. And this reduces the robustness of the stored procedures and kind of forces you to let a lot of, where you might be tempted to trap all errors, you instead really need to let them propagate out into the application, that is into PHP or Java, where the exception handling routines can examine the error code and take appropriate action. And so this is a short-term problem. We expect this to be rectified in 5.2. But for now, it's one of the reasons you need to take into account when considering whether or not to make use of stored procedures or how widely to use stored procedures in your application. Something you simply have to be aware of when making the decision whether or not to use stored procedures in a particular application.
After providing an overview of some advantages and disadvantages, Guy now takes time to interject his advice on the use of stored procedures in practice. He also provides you with some best practice standards. Remember to stay tuned for some information on the new version of TOEFL for MySQL.
So, given all those pros and cons, what sort of advice would we give people when thinking about using stored procedures? Well, I can't tell you whether it's right or wrong for your application because you are the ones who will know what your application demands are. But personally, I tend to be very pragmatic about these sorts of things and try to avoid religious positions such as never use stored procedures or always use stored procedures. And so I tend to, in applications I've worked with, stored procedures tend to be a significant but not a dominant part of the overall application architecture. They are often used to encapsulate significant transactions that are primarily database-oriented transactions, that is, where the sequence of events are all got to do with selecting a value out of the database, doing an update, doing an insert, and just bundling all that database interaction into one spot. And that assists with, I think, the clarity of the code in the client or the middle tier, and it reduces network traffic. And I tend to like to have logging and so forth implemented inside stored triggers, and I certainly like to use stored functions where possible to simplify SQL. And I'm a bit of a performance-oriented guy, so I'm always looking to leverage performance in whatever way I can, and sometimes stored procedures help with that. I'm also of the opinion that you should not use them when computation is the essence of what you're doing. When you are using stored procedures, whether you're using them to a significant degree or whether they're a minor part of your application, it's definitely wise to adopt some best practice standards. Now, if you're using stored procedures to create a very secure application, as we discussed earlier, you must use stored procedures in a consistent manner. Now, there are two major patterns to this. There's the pattern in which stored procedures are used for all DML operations. And in this case, we allow SQL statements within the application to be selects only, but for any transactional work, any update, deletes or inserts, they're encapsulated into stored procedures. Now, the reason why we might want to do it this way is because there are certain advantages sometimes to building up an SQL dynamically, a select statement dynamically in an application to do a kind of a dynamic SQL based on user input, maybe a search screen with very many options for searching. We might build up the SQL on the fly. That's kind of harder to do in a stored procedure. We also find in some languages that getting result sets out of stored procedures can be a bit more difficult. And finally, and perhaps most significantly, the way in which we get result sets out of stored procedures differs across the database engines. So as soon as we write some code that gets a stored procedure result set, we're locking into the back-end database. And generally speaking, we may be very, very happy with MySQL and never want to leave it. But generally speaking, we try not to write code that is database-specific whenever we can. And the other pattern is the same, except that we also use stored procedures for retrieving all the result sets that we might want. Now, this is a pattern that is very, very common in the SQL Server world, because SQL Server has stored procedures that can easily return result sets, and it's been a pattern set up mainly in the 90s that a lot of applications will use stored procedures for virtually everything. In the Oracle world, because Oracle doesn't return stored procedures very easily, the pattern has been to encapsulate DML in the way I discussed earlier. So these two dominant patterns really come out of the experience of the legacy database vendors, Oracle and SQL Server. You're certainly free to create your own patterns, but if you're creating a security pattern and you don't do it effectively, then you're potentially opening little security holes that an intruder could walk through. Stored procedure code is as much a part of your application as any other part of the code. Nevertheless, we've seen historically that stored procedures are sometimes subjected to more lax discipline than, say, code in C or Java or C# or what have you. And our recommendation is that you apply the same disciplines to stored procedure code as you would apply to anything else. This means that you should apply coding standards and practices, and often it can be wise to adopt a templating system so that people, when they start a new procedure, have a template that has the standard headers and enforces some of the layout. We can help you with that in our Toad for MySQL product. It has configurable templates for your stored procedures, so if you want, you can configure Toad for MySQL such that when someone creates a new procedure, function or trigger, that the standard template for your company is loaded in. Another thing that's probably a worst practice in the stored procedure world is editing in place. And by editing in place, I mean it's very, very easy to take the stored procedure definition that's in the database, extract it into your IDE, and go ahead and edit it. And this is probably okay for trivial ad hoc stored procedures, but in general for production systems, it's an absolute no-no. It's virtually the same as going onto a production website, going into the Apache web directory and editing the HTML files directly while people are online and accessing the system. It's incredibly risky. It gives you no fallback positions should you make a critical mistake and break the application. And so almost any software developer of any experience will tell you that you must use a version control system for your code, and that's as true for stored procedure code as for anything else. And so your stored procedure code should, the reference version of it should be on the file system and should be backed up to Subversion or CVS or some other version control system of your choice. Again, we can help you with that because our Toad for MySQL IDE product integrates with those version control systems and can allow you to check in or out your code directly from the IDE. And once you've checked it out and you're satisfied that it works, then you can deploy it to the database, the production database, saving a copy into the version control system and labeling appropriately. The other best practices are pretty much the same as those that apply to most programming languages. Be modular. Stored procedure language is not an object-oriented language, but that doesn't mean that you should write spaghetti code. It's still quite possible to correctly structure and correctly encapsulate your internal variables such that you provide a consistent interface for your operations and avoiding side effects, avoid global variables. There is not a global variable per se in the stored procedure language, but user variables that you can use in MySQL in general can be used as global variables, but you should use them very sparingly and so forth. In general, don't abandon good practice just because you're using a language that stores in the database server. It's still production code and it needs to be treated with appropriate respect. Well, that's our webcast. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you found it useful. I wish you good luck with your stored procedure programming. I can always be contacted at guy.harrison@quest.com. Thanks.
That concludes Guy Harrison's podcast. We hope you found it helpful. For Guy Harrison, I'm Nicole Tams. Thanks for listening.